888-789-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Good afternoon, everybody. The New York Giants getting ready to take on the Dallas Cowboys in a very important NFC East battle on Sunday afternoon in Arlington. And Lance, the Giants have to turn the page here, but we should do some bookkeeping based off of last week's game. Jermaine McBride surgery. Victor Cruz successful surgery on that patella tendon, and the Giants now move forward to get ready for the Dallas Cowboys. They bring Chandler Fenner up from the practice squad to replace Tremaine McBride, and it'll be a combination of Preston Parker, Corey Washington, and, of course, Odell Beckham doing the job at wide receiver.
Preston Parker will be the first man up, and he was ahead of everybody else on the depth chart in the early stages of this season. Corey Washington's going to get opportunities, and I know the Giants fan base is anxious to see what he can offer, but don't expect him to automatically move into the starting mix. You're going to have Reuben Randle alongside Odell Beckham, Parker in the slot, and then they'll probably work in Corey Washington in some red zone plays, but that's exactly what the Giants receiving core is looking like. There's nothing official in terms of call-ups, but there are rumors that are speculating in which Chandler Fenner will be called up from the practice squad. Perhaps they'll look to add Julian Talley to the active roster as well. So they need some additional depth at corner with Tremaine McBride's status up in the air. He has not been officially placed on season-ending IR, but he is getting surgery on his thumb, and they already lost Walter Thurman. So this is the second slot corner they've lost on the season. Jaron Hosley was just brought back to the active roster. He saw some time in the Eagles' loss. He'll be the first man up in the slot. They still have Prince. They still have DRC. And you have the luxury of Zach Bowman, who I think they brought in to provide depth, not just in the slot, but also on the outside.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Bowman, though, not much of a slot guy. Doesn't have that side-to-side quickness to stay with those quicker guys in the slot. And it's certainly going to be a very, very tough matchup this week with the Dallas Cowboys, who have a variety of wide receivers that play inside, outside. They do a little bit of everything. Cole Beasley, Dez Bryant, Terrence Williams, even throw Dwayne Harris into the mix. Obviously a very talented group that the Giants are going to have to deal with on Sunday. And as we preview that game, we should be joined in just a couple minutes by Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com. He'll be calling in, and we always join him on their show down in Dallas. They join us up here, give us the inside scoop on what's going on in Big D, and a couple pieces of news from Dallas today in fact, Lance, so we'll touch on it before we get to Mickey. Number one, backup running back Joseph Randle was apparently caught shoplifting.
Yes.
That's a misdemeanor. It's
not part of the practice schedule,
I assume. No, it is not. Some perfume and some underwear, actually. So always good times when that's happening to one of your football players. So the Cowboys are going to have to deal with that. They have Lance Dunbar as more of a third down back, so they're going to have to figure that out moving forward. And the other piece of news, Doug Free, their starting right tackle, probably either their fourth or fifth best offensive lineman, him and Ronald Leary, not as good as Martin Frederick and Tyron Smith. But he's going to be out 3 to 4 weeks with a foot injury, and that means Parnell will step in at right tackle for them. He did start a couple games a couple years ago. He's a veteran. He has experience, but certainly doesn't have the pedigree that Free does or have the continuity with the rest of the offensive line that Doug Free has.
Well, Free was banged up in 2012, so they both rotated at that right tackle spot a few years ago. So he does have starting experience under his belt, and he came in to replace Doug Free in the latest victory for the Cowboys against the Seahawks. And I went back and watched the game-winning touchdown for DeMarco Murray. Purnell was the guy that opened up the hole with the addition of the fullback. So, you know, it's not as if Doug Free's out of the lineup and all of a sudden the Cowboys are in panic mode and they're turning to a rookie. I think that they have at least confidence in the veteran presence that they're bringing into the mix. And this is the other thing to keep in mind. This is the third straight game, John, that the Giants are going up against an offensive line that was a little banged up or there were question marks. So the easiest thing to automatically assume is, oh, this is an advantage for the Giants. They're going to call on everybody, the pressure packages, and they're going to get to the opposing quarterback. And time again, they have failed to do that. It's not as if they got to Matt Ryan time and time again. And clearly, Nick Foles was untouched. So, you know, be careful with how you read into this injury. I don't think the Cowboys are in a position where there's a major downgrade from Doug Free to Jermaine Purnell.
And you talk about pass protection, but running the football has been a huge part of the Cowboys game this year, and a lot of that has to do with the offensive line and continuity. But Purnell actually made a couple key blocks on those runs at the end of the game against the Seahawks. So certainly it's good news for the Giants that entire Cowboy offensive line is not intact. But moving forward, they'll have to see exactly how it affects Dallas. It's the first time they'll be missing any offensive lineman off of that line from the beginning of the season. They've been very healthy in that regard so far this year. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We hope to be joined by Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com in just a second. A couple of things out of Dallas, Lance, that we should touch on just to get ready for this game. Their defense this year was projected by everybody to be one of the worst in the league, and a lot of people thought maybe the worst of all time. They've certainly struggled a lot. in the last couple of years. They changed defensive coordinators for the third time in 3 years. They went from Rob Ryan to Monty Kiffin. Then Rod Marinelli took over this year. And the talent isn't that much different to me. If anything, you can even argue it was a downgrade from last year to this year with no Sean Lee, no DeMarcus Ware. But they're playing, if not spectacular, very solid football and keeping their offense in the game.
They're the 15th best defense in the National Football League, and I said this at the beginning of the season. If Rod Marinelli was able to get this group in the top 15 this early in the season, he's doing something right.
Yeah.
So it truly is amazing how effective this Cowboys defense has performed so far this season. I've got the numbers out in front of me. They're 12th against the pass. They're 17th against the rush. They're giving up 115 yards on the ground, 228 yards through the air, and they also have a number of takeaways on the season. They have 10 so far this year, so they've been somewhat of an opportunistic defense. Probably the one guy to focus in on that has been a pleasant surprise for the Cowboys is linebacker Orlando McClain, who was retired a year ago. He was on the street. The Cowboys convinced him to come back because they had to make up for who John just alluded to, the loss of Sean Lee in the middle, and McClain has been probably the heart and soul of this defense. So any weakness that you thought, at least in the early stages of the season, has actually become a strength for the Dallas Cowboys defense. Plus, getting Orlando Scandrick back from that shortened suspension since the NFL changed its rules and regulations dictating that, I think that's helped because he's arguably been their best corner.
Yeah, and they lost Morris Claiborne, a first-round pick from a few years ago, but he was playing terribly before he got hurt, so that really wasn't much of a downgrade for Dallas. In fact, a lot of people thought Sterling Moore, who replaced Morris Claiborne as that third cornerback behind Carr and Scandrick, was actually playing better to begin with. So didn't lose a whole lot, and Rolando McClain at middle linebacker has really been a bit of a revelation. He had retired from football a couple times, tried to come back, and he really has been great with Dallas when he's had the time to play. 201-939-4513. We'll take a couple calls as we await Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com. Let's go to the phone to say hello to Alicia in Indianapolis. Alicia, you're up first. What's going on? Let's go to Alicia on the lines. Alicia, what's going on? You're on Giants.com. How are you?
Alicia, you there?
Alicia, you there? All right, looks like we don't have her. 201-939-4513. We'll be joined by Mickey Spagnuolo in just 1 second on Giants.com. And Lance, as we get ready for this game here, this is a virtual must-win for the Giants. I know it's hard to say that in week number 7, but considering their record of 3-3-3, two games behind Dallas and Philly in the division, but more importantly, the tough schedule after the bye. If they go into the bye at 3-4, they're going to have to pull out some magical wins in weeks 9, 10, 11 in order to make a run here.
Well, you've already lost two games in the NFC against non-divisional opponents. That's the Lions and the Cardinals. So if you're starting to think about wild card, you're impacted from that perspective. Then you go back to the division. The good news is you're going to get all three divisional opponents at home, but that doesn't mean that it's going to get any easier for you. If you go into the bye a game under 500, knowing coming out of the bye, you have a stretch of the Colts, the Niners, and the Seahawks, I mean, the margin for error is minute at that point. You cannot mess up at all. I mean, you don't have the opportunity to maybe sacrifice one game. So this is certainly a must win, and it's also a must win from a momentum standpoint. You want to take some momentum into the bye, and you want to prove that this last game was a complete anomaly, and this is not something that's all of a sudden going to continue moving forward, because who saw this out of the offensive line? Who expected that?
Exactly, and the Cowboys don't exactly have the best defensive line in terms of pass rushing in the league here. They've struggled this year. Anthony Spencer's come back. He's been effective. Henry Melton off that ACL last year has given them a little bit, but they haven't done a ton in terms of getting after the quarterback. Their best game was probably against the Seahawks last week against Russell Wilson, put a lot of pressure on him. But much like this past week, you're not talking about the 85 Bears. You're not talking about the early 90s Eagles. You're not talking about Leon Lett and Charles Haley from the early 90s Cowboys here. The Giants' offensive line should be able to take care of business and move the football. Like we said, the Cowboy defense has been better. It's been surprising, but it hasn't exactly been spectacular here. So they should be able to move the football. And the one thing the Dallas defense hasn't done a great job of is forcing turnovers. So the Giants should be able to protect the football against Dallas.
The turnovers have come in bunches for the Dallas Cowboys. It wasn't as if it's happened consistently. It really depends on the Giants' game plan. It will be very interesting to see, John, if they utilize the running backs a little bit more against the Dallas Cowboys, something that we barely saw against the Philadelphia Eagles. And what I mean by that, I'm not talking about running the ball. I'm talking about using them as a receiver. Now, Andre Williams is not known as a receiver, but that doesn't mean that you dictate to the defense and say, hey, when he he's in, we're not going to throw him the football. You need to get him somewhat involved, and I think that was something that they should have made a greater effort to do against the Philadelphia Eagles, because you played essentially into the hands of their pressure package, and you made it very easy for the Philadelphia defensive line.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We hope to be joined by Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com in just a couple of minutes as we get ready for Giants and Cowboys. And, Lance, we've got a bunch of Twitter questions. I'll look at them right now. We already have a bunch rolling in here.
Well, I've got one on the injury front. Yeah. BBN Uncensored at Big Blue Uncensored asks, what's going on with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie? And we hit off some of the injuries off the top of the show. With DRC, it's really going to be a game of management. He's dealing with multiple injuries. We're no doctors. We're no experts. But we're talking about back spasms, forced him out of the last game. He's also dealing with an IT band injury, which is pretty much the entire length of the right leg. There's an ankle issue. There's a hip area issue. Like John Beeson, they're going to have to be very careful with how they utilize him during the course of practice and moving forward. And it's not something that Tom Coughlin is very excited about, because he's been asked about this over the last few weeks. He doesn't want to have to keep having DRC come in and out of the lineup. So that is something that they're hoping that they can get a better hold on moving forward.
And now we are joined by Mickey Spagnuolo, DallasCowboys.com. It took us a while to get connected. That's our fault, Mick. What's going on? Good to hear from you. I know we only got about 10 minutes with you. You have your own show down in Dallas in about 15. How's it going this afternoon?
I'm doing just fine. Beautiful day in Dallas-Fort Worth today.
All right, Mickey, let's break this down here. Giants and Cowboys, and I want to start the defense, because most people expected this Dallas defense to be a bit of a mess this year, but if not spectacular, they've been very solid and kept the Cowboys in the games they've been in. How do you account for the type of turnaround we've seen from Dallas on that side of the ball from last year to this year? Is it all defensive coordinator, or is it a little more than that?
You know, I think Rod Marinelli certainly has a lot to do with it. Certainly like his approach. He has connected with these players. He's got them playing hard. He's got them playing physical. And I think his game plans have been really good. And he's got guys sort of executing. I know not many people know the names. And, you know, starting the season, when you kind of looked at it, I mean, I was skeptical. I thought that whatever success the Cowboys might have this year would depend on how well this defense came along. And, you know, I think they're getting better. It's certainly not a finished product. They certainly have their deficiencies. But just how Marinelli calls the defense, I think it's been better than it was last year. I think he's got them playing more aggressively, more man defense than all the Tampa 2 zone that you always hear about. And I think they're getting guys that, you know, you weren't sure of how they were going to play this year, because they were either coming off of surgeries or not having played last year because of injuries. And these guys are starting to come on now and get with it. So I think that's had the biggest effect on how this defense has played, probably better than most people expected.
And, Mickey, one name in particular that has been a pleasant surprise is middle linebacker Rolando McClain. The Cowboys lost Sean Lee during the offseason. What has he done to solidify that linebacking unit, and what has he meant for the overall defense?
Well, I think overall he's brought a physical presence that I'm not sure this defense had, and I think it's become contagious. Secondly, he's awfully talented. When you see him move on the football field, you understand he's a little different than everybody else. And the big question all along was, how quickly could he shed the rust from really not having played much football since like November 25th of 2012? And also, how committed was he to playing? Well, the rust is coming off. He seems certainly very committed to wanting to play football again. And he has made, I think, when he's on the field at middle linebacker, a significant difference in the quality of play, not only against the run, but also his ability to go sideline to sideline and drop in pass coverage.
When do the Cowboys expect DeMarcus Lawrence to be back on the practice field and then back in a game situation, Mickey, their second-round pick?
Yeah, they put him on the IR return list, which means he had to sit out 8 games. So he's got to sit out 2 more games, but he can start practicing this week. You can start practicing after the sixth game. So that'll be another boost, because he was going to be a guy that was going to give him a pass rush that I don't think most other guys on the team could give him when we were at training camp. Now that they've got Anthony Spencer back on the field and he's shedding some rust, he's starting to show that he just might be the Anthony Spencer of old. And if they can get DeMarcus Lawrence to pick up where he left off at some point in training camp, they'll have two bookend ends that can create some pressure. Lawrence just kind of got a natural ability to rush the quarterback, and I'm sure they'll kind of ease him back in once he's eligible to play in that ninth game, but at least come in on third downs as a pass rusher.
Talking with Mickey Spagnuolo of DallasCowboys.com. And, Mickey, the running game certainly has no rust for the Dallas Cowboys. Tops in the NFL. In previous seasons, Mickey, the Cowboys barely ran the football. This year now they're leaning on the run game. Why has the run game been so effective, and how much pressure has that taken off of Tony Romo this season?
Yeah, it's more of a complete offense now. Previously, they couldn't run the ball, and they didn't have any confidence in their ability to run the ball. Well, once you show that you can be effective doing something, you can lean on it, and they certainly have. I think Zach Martin has solidified that offensive line. He might have been the last piece that they needed at that right guard spot. And just think about, you know, the experience. Now, Travis Frederick's a second-year guy. Ron Leary, a second-year guy. Tyron Smith now getting a lot of confidence in himself after going to that Pro Bowl last year. And Zach Martin is mature behind his years, and Doug Free has been playing solid, although had a foot injury in this past game. So I think with an offensive line playing the way it's been playing, it gives Murray a chance to get into some holes and run kind of in his bullish style, and it also helps protect Tony Romo. And so when you can have a balanced offense where it's not all on the quarterback's shoulders, it keeps defenses kind of guessing. It creates some anxiety on defense, where before everybody sort of knew that just pin your ears back, go get Tony Romo, and you'll stop the Cowboys' offense.
Mickey, you mentioned the Doug Free injury, not expected to play this week, according to reports at least. I know you haven't heard anything from Dallas yet on him. Jeremy Parnell will step in for him. He's played a lot before. Him and Free actually rotated snaps, I think, as late as last year, if I recall properly. How much of a downgrade is that, and how much do you think that will affect the Cowboys' run game and their ability to protect Tony Romo?
I think it'll affect him. I thought Doug Free was playing well, and I didn't think Jeremy Parnell in training camp was playing particularly well. He hasn't had much of an opportunity to play this year other than coming in at times as the pass-blocking third tight end. He only got like five or six plays in this last game when he came in for Free, although the first play he was in on, they ran for a 15-yard touchdown. He threw a nice block. I'll be anxious to see if he plays better than what he was playing in preseason and what he was doing in the offseason, because I thought he was struggling somewhat. I think it's at this point I'd classify it as an unknown.
Moving to the receiving core, Mickey, Terrence Williams, who's the complement to Dez Bryant, who was the third-round pick last year. I remember in the opener against the Giants last season, there was a miscue with him and Romo, and it led to a Giants interception. This year, he seems to have made some progress. How much of a threat is he now in this passing game, and what have you seen out of him?
Well, here's the thing with Terrence Williams, and you're right about how he started his rookie season, but he certainly showed a lot of improvement from that point to the end of the year. He's got speed. He's got deceptive speed. And if teams think they're going to double Dez and single him up, he can take advantage of that. The Cowboys can take advantage of that. He's a pretty good deep threat. He's got sneaky speed. He can get behind people. He's tall. And you know, when he gets into this consistency of catching the ball in his hands like he did on the third down play and tapping his feet in that game against Seattle for a 22-yard game when it was third and 20, he can be a big weapon for them. And it's somebody that teams can't go to sleep on and say, well, we just take Dez away, take Witten away, and we can stop this passing game. Not so. Terrence Williams is really coming on in his second year.
Final question for Mickey Spagnuolo, DallasCowboys.com. And, Mickey, it's a bit of a complicated one, so bear with me. A huge win against Seattle. How did the Cowboys pull that together to win that game in Seattle, number one? Then, number two, are they guarding this week against a potential letdown? I know it's a division game against the hated Giants. You wouldn't think a letdown's possible, but coming off a monster win like that, is that something that's been talked about down there in Dallas at all this week?
Well, I'm sure it will continue to be. First of all, the win over Seattle, I thought you had to put a lot of that on the defense. The defense played a lot better than I thought they could. Going into the game, I was skeptical about the defense. I thought the Cowboys could play well enough offensively to play with Seattle, despite what everybody thinks of their defense. But I was worried about the Cowboys' offense, defense. But they were able to stop Marshawn Lynch, which made Russell Wilson play quarterback. You know, they couldn't do all their little fancy hocus-pocus stuff back there in the backfield that allows him to use his deceptiveness to play quarterback. They forced him, when they got behind, to play quarterback, meaning stand in the pocket and throw the ball. And when he has to do that, I don't think he's the same quarterback. And again, he's 5'10". And when you're 5'10 and a half in the pocket, it's hard to see. So I thought they had a good game plan for that. As for going forward, I think that the Giants are coming to town helps. The veterans here know the struggles the Cowboys have had at home against the Giants. They understand it's an NFC East game. And frankly, these young guys, they haven't accomplished anything yet. So that the fact that they're 5-1, they don't know anything much about 8-8. You know, I counted up going to Seattle in this game last Sunday. There were 34 of the 53 guys on this team that didn't play in that game against Seattle in 2012. Wow. So this is a new team. It's a young team. And they don't know enough to be fat and happy. At least that's my take going into this week.
Mickey, enjoy the rest of the week. We'll talk to you on game day. Enjoy, and we'll talk to you here soon, all right?
Thanks a lot, Mickey.
Okay, John, anytime. Give me a call.
We'll do, Mick. Thanks a lot. That's Mickey Spagnuolo. We always have Mickey on our pregame show on the radio on Sundays. We'll hear from him again on Sunday as we get ready for Giants and Cowboys. And, you know, he talked about it. The defense has played a lot better than people have thought, and that's a big reason they're 5-1. All right, we've talked enough. Let's hear from you guys at 201-939-4513. Let's go to Nick in New Jersey. Nick, you've been holding the longest. You're up first here on Giants.com. What's going on, Nick?
John, Lance, what can I say? I think the Giants joined Geno Smith at the movies this week because they did not show up at all. There was no heart. There was no toughness. And I don't know, the last couple of years, it just seems like the Eagles have the Giants' number, and I don't know why. You guys have any ideas on that?
Well, they have suffered some heartbreaking losses to the Eagles, and there's been games where it looks like they were going to dominate Philly, and Philly came back, not to pour salt on some wounds for Giants fans. I don't know if I can really put my finger on it, Nick, to tell you what the common thread is. I mean, the roster has changed for the Eagles. It's not as if they're still going up against DeSean Jackson and Michael Vick and company.
It is LeSean McCoy, though.
It is LeSean McCoy, been a troubling aspect of the Philadelphia offense for the Giants for the last few years. But, I mean, it went beyond LeSean McCoy on Sunday.
Oh, no question.
It wasn't just McCoy who gave them a headache.
And look, it's only been Chip Kelly for three games. The Eagles have beaten the Giants twice when they've had their team healthy. They've lost to them once when Barkley had to play quarterback. So that's not a surprise. Look, guys, the Eagles are a good team. Chip Kelly's a good coach. I mean, they have a lot of teams' numbers. Look, getting shut out and getting demolished like they did is bad, but losing to the Eagles in Philadelphia in and of itself, regardless of the score and how it happened, is certainly no crime. The Eagles are a good football team.
This division's much stronger this year, and that was well documented heading in.
No, that's true. And is there any chance that Rashad Jennings plays this week? Because after what I saw on Sunday, I mean, other than the one first run that he had, Andre Williams, I have no trust in him whatsoever.
Well, but keep in mind, a lot of that, Nick, is based on the offensive line performance. And we took phone calls yesterday. I think a lot of people are overlooking the offensive line. I mean, Andre Williams didn't dazzle, but, you know, even if Jennings is playing in this game, Nick, you can't assume that he's going to run for 100 yards. I mean, there were very little holes for anyone to work with.
And to your question, I would consider Jennings less than 50-50 to play this week, although we have no injury report. So I really don't have any information. I'm going on instinct and what I know about MCL injuries. I'd give him a less, somewhere between 10% and 15% chance of playing on Sunday. Maybe it works out. He's a fast healer. He works hard. But right now, Nick, I don't have any new information, so I'm simply going off a gut, to be quite honest with you.
Right. At the piggyback off what you said yesterday, Lance.
Yeah, real quick.
I would like to see Corey Washington, not because I think he's going to be favored by any means, but to add some depth to keep these guys a little more fresh on the field instead of running them constantly over and over and over again to get a little bit of change of a pace.
All right, Nick, thanks for the call, pal.
And appreciate the phone call, Nick. I mean, right now, I don't know if the big concern is depth at the wide receiver core. I mean, you keep going three and out, John. I don't think you're going to wear out your wide receiver
core.
And
the one thing Odell Beckham should have is fresh legs. He should have some plays in him, all right? Let's be honest.
If there's anybody who doesn't need to rest on the sideline, it's him.
And Preston Parker hasn't played a ton of snaps
either.
Parker
doesn't
have
a lot of mileage.
Should be able to, you know, play a decent amount of snaps come Sunday afternoon. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Lance will keep an eye on Twitter as we move along. Just chime in if you see something you think is interesting.
Absolutely.
You're on that?
I am
You're
on
sure?
top of that. I am.
You're ready to go?
Yes.
Okay.
I hear you. Let's
Positive.
Go. I'm
You're
ready
sure?
for the phones.
Okay.
I'm ready for the tweets.
Brian,
we can multitask.
Brian in Virginia. You're up next, Brian. How are you?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi. Loud and clear, Brian. What's up?
All right. Okay. I want to make 3 points. One is to piggyback off the point the last call I made. I think everybody's got to get off Andre Williams' back a little bit. I mean, you could have put Emmitt Smith back there, and he wouldn't have made any plays.
Yeah, not a lot of room.
I mean, you know. Yeah, go ahead.
No, Brian, we're in agreement with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that loss was squarely on the offensive line. If you actually do the math, when the Giants are busy scoring, the other team isn't. So, I mean, when the Giants are using the clock and scoring, I don't think the Eagles score much more than 17 points. The second point I want to make is that, you know, the Giants, I still think, have just enough talent still to compete in the NFC East, which leads me to my third point, which is we're going to see who the Giants really are when they play the Cowboys. Because, I mean, when you think about the old Giants, like in the 80s and the 90s, they would never take a loss like that and then not come back and at least – give the other team fits the following week.
Well, Brian, here's the funny thing. I was saying the same thing you just said before the Eagles game on Sunday night, and after that game, we still don't know who the Giants are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, except that, you know, the Giants hadn't taken a beating that badly yet this season. So, I mean, I think after losing to the division opponent, you're really going to see, like, whether or not, no matter who shows up against the Cowboys, if they show up and they get blown out again, that's the team that they are this season. If they show up and they at least compete, then at least you know they got some heart, and then you can at least trust them not to try to have that happen again.
Now, Brian,
I
think that's a great point. The result maybe isn't as important because I think the Giants can play well on Sunday and still lose. But you want them to come out there and put together a good, solid game. On that, I agree with you 100%. You want to see them bounce back, not just from the bad loss, but see the team persevere through a bad injury that they suffered with Victor Cruz, too, and fight through that. So I'm on board with you 100%. I'm with you.
Exactly. Well,
thanks,
bud. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to make those points.
Nah,
you got it.
Great point.
No, you want to be competitive in every single game. I mean, you don't want to see a 10-point victory followed by a blowout. Not a consistent
team. And the big thing, remember in 2007 before the Super Bowl, the big Fox video, resiliency, that was the big theme for that Giants team as they faced so much adversity in 2007. Well, you know what? This is adversity right now. Will this team take the adversity and help it fuel them, help it make them a better team? Or will they let it drive them down and play worse? We'll find out on Sunday. 201-939-4513. Andrew in Easton, Pennsylvania. Andrew, you're up next.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Andrew?
Well, Andrew? What you got?
I had to stick with last week like everybody else, too. I mean, I saw a lot as everyone else said. I saw a lot of things I really wasn't happy with. And this is the second game this year where I'm looking at McAdoo, and we're passing on third and one, and we're running counters with the slowest guy, Peyton Hillis, around the edge on, like, third and 11. What is the logic behind that?
Andrew,
you're trying to make room for to punt, maybe, but, I mean, give me something a little better than that. Don't run at least just the slowest guy on the team. They got them running around the outside on third and long.
I think that was the third and 26 you're talking about there. So I'm
exactly.
So I'm not gonna get too upset. I don't think there are many plays in the playbook for third and 26. So that doesn't bother me. Like the one on the third and one though. Lance and I talked about this yesterday.
That was early in the game.
And I was confused why they didn't try to run the football there as well. I think that's fair. But I will say this too, Brian. Andrew, excuse me. The issues the Giants had, I thought, on Sunday night, and I've gone back and forth with people on Twitter all week about this, had a lot more to do with execution by the front four on defense and the linebackers on defense, and more importantly, the offensive line not being able to block, than it had to do with the play calling. You could, again, you could have Vince Lombardi back there
right.
calling
we
plays.
We got destroyed in the trenches. Yeah. I'm not saying we didn't.
Yeah, and that's why the game was so lopsided. I mean, I brought the numbers up in front of me. They were 2 of 14 on third down. Three downs were for 5 yards or less. And then they had 10 for 10 yards or more, including one. And these were within the 10 that were for 10 yards. They had a third and 19, a third and 20, a third and 21, and a third and 25. Now, to put that in perspective, in the last game they had 6 third downs for 7 yards or more, and prior to that, 7 downs for 7 yards or more. So they nearly matched how many double-digit third downs they had in the last two games combined. That's how ugly the game was. But to nitpick on the play calling, you know, I mean, I don't know how productive that's going to be because they were in such uncharted territory throughout the course of the game. And, Andrew, I think it gets back to the fact that it's not as if they gave up late in the game. I think they didn't want anybody to get hurt. They didn't want Eli Manning to take an unnecessary hit. So, you know what, third and 25, there's not a lot of faith that they're going to convert it, hand it off to Peyton Hillis, give Steve Weatherford some room for another punt, as you alluded to, and let's move on.
All right. Now, also, what do you – do the Giants still have the rights to Tally? Did he get back on the practice squad?
Yes, that's correct. Signed on the practice squad, yeah.
So is he coming up because Cruz is out?
Well, nothing's official, but if you connect the dots, you would assume that Tally is going to replace Cruz, and there is speculation that Fenner will replace, obviously, the injury to Tremaine McBride.
Well, remember, though, they would have to free up another roster spot. They would have to put McBride on IR, because I'm sure Cruz will get IR'd, so that frees up one roster spot. Whether or not they IR McBride will determine whether or not they have another roster spot for a guy like Tally. So that'll be a wait-and-see type of scenario. I'm sure the Giants will have some kind of roster move tomorrow and make it official later on today, and we'll go from there.
So that would be probably Beckham at 1, Randall at 2, Parker at 3, Washington at 4, Tally at 5?
I think that's probably how you would do it, yeah. And maybe I think right now Randall's probably officially the 1, but that really doesn't matter at this point.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Okay, well, I mean, I'm still hopeful against Dallas. I got to tell you one other thing.
Yeah, finish
really
up, Andrew. Be
extra
quick.
I'm mad about the Giants game. Because I had a 19 parlay going on and a teaser, and I would have won $3,000 if the Giants lost by only 9.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
They certainly didn't cooperate for
no,
you.
No, they did not. Thanks for the call, Andrew.
Yeah, see you later.
Appreciate it, man. Boy, I've never heard of a 19 parlay. Yeah. Jeez. Let's go back to the phones at 201-939-4513. Let's go to Felix in San Antonio. Felix, you're up next.
Hi, there. It's Felix in San Antonio. Hey, go Big Blue. That's all I have to say. And I'm from San Antonio, and everybody thinks this is Dallas country over here. But I changed everybody's mind. This is New York country over here.
Oh,
and
really?
I'm going to Dallas this weekend to go see my Big Blue take down the Cowboys
so
and finish their winning streak.
So you have converted all of San Antonio to Giant fans, Felix. Excellent work.
Oh, no, some of them, but they can't true. They can see the Big Blue is better than silver and blue.
Well, let me ask you this, Felix. Is it still Spurs country, or are you trying to convert everybody to
Spurs
a Knicks
country.
Fan, too?
Don't doubt my Spurs country.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that.
My title's over here.
That is good to hear. Absolutely.
Yeah. But also, I want to say, it's time to wipe off the grass from the feet of Philadelphia off their jerseys and move on and punch in the clock and take out the Cowboys this week.
Well, Felix, thanks for the call, man. And that is certainly going to be the message that Tom Coughlin gives his team. Don't look back, look forward, and the Giants are certainly going to do that. Boy, I can only imagine the material this guy was compiling over the last day or two just to ready to call in and give his explosion. So I'll give you the floor for about 60 seconds, Charlie. Me and Lance promise we won't interrupt you. You have 60 seconds.
I don't know about that, but we'll
no interrupting for 60 seconds. Charlie, and your timer starts now.
Great. Thank you, guys. Hey, I got a few things to say. But one thing is I don't understand why the Giants coaches, Fuel, McAdoo, and Coughlin, when they see their game plan is falling apart, why can't they change it? Why can't they – the best coaches see what's going on, and then they realize, okay, that's not working, so this is what we're going to do to counter what they're doing. They didn't do that. When Pugh was just – after the second sack, Pugh gave up. I would have had a tight end
30 seconds
right next to him the rest of the game helping him. Or if he was going to continue to do what he did, he had no confidence left, I would have sat him. But I don't even know if Charlie Brown or Brewer were even active. I don't know. But whoever that next guy up was, I would have put him in there. He couldn't have done any worse than what Pugh was doing. He totally lost his confidence. He didn't know whether the guy was going on passing him on the left or he's going to come and pass him on the right. But I would have had a tight end with him the whole time.
Second, well, keep in mind now that your time has expired, Charlie. So I have to interrupt on that. I'll let you. Well,
yes, it was. Charlie, I timed it, Charlie. That was 60
seconds.
I'll
let you continue. Number one, the tight ends had trouble blocking. Okay, let's not overlook that. If you remember, Larry Donnell's snaps were limited because Daniel Fells was brought in because they felt that he would at least be more effective as a blocker. So before you crown the tight ends, I mean, there needs to be room for improvement in that department across the board, not just with Donnell, everybody.
Charlie Brown was active on Sunday,
by the way. You would have had him as a chip blocker. You know, just have someone to help him out. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and I think they made an effort to switch some of the personnel to answer your question, but I still don't think they were as effective as they were anticipating them to be.
All right. The other thing, John, if you remember, I tweeted you, and I said, why don't we use the free safety package, take a linebacker out, and use the tackling machine, Burles, who's supposed to be the tackling machine, to go after Shady McCoy and Sproles. It would have been – Why couldn't they just fuel change that up and said, man, this ain't working with our linebackers. Let's put this guy in. He's a lot faster. Maybe he can stay with him, or at least he may be able to tackle him before he gets 20 yards
Charlie,
up the field.
Quite honestly, is Stevie Brown faster than Jaquan Williams?
No, I'm talking about
career?
Burrow. Burrow is supposed to be
Burhey.
Look, you got Johnny Depp's out there, Johnny Demps. You know,
he plays football. That's impressive.
I know who he is. I'm just saying he is a backup safety. He is not a starter. Stevie Brown is a starter. He made some mental mistakes, but I would have put him and Burrow in there. You should have used the safety. I'm just saying when your plan is not working, you got to change up. You got to say, no, let me try this. None of these coaches – did anything to change. They kept doing the same thing.
Charlie, that's not necessarily changing your game plan. That's changing personnel, which are two different things. And I think coaches, you know, unless guys are doing something egregiously bad for, you know, extended period. When I say extended period of time, I mean over a couple of games. I mean, it's hard to bench a guy because he's a bad quarter. I mean, you start doing stuff like that, you erode guys' confidence, you screw with their heads a little bit. I'm not sure you can bench a guy like Justin Pugh because he has a few bad snaps in the first quarter when he's been your starter for, you know, a year and a half now.
He lost his confidence.
No, he was terrible.
He admitted it after the game. But, I mean, the bottom line is
all I'm saying. We need coaches the best coaches in the NFL are the coaches who, when things aren't going well and aren't going by their game plan, they know how to change things up. They could look at Kelly and say, okay, this is what he's doing. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to counter with during the game. And we didn't do that at all.
Now, but Charlie,
and
here's
I'm not
the thing.
Up
Charlie.
On the Giants. I'm just saying, if we don't win next week, then you can give up on the Giants.
Okay, well, but Charlie, I'm glad we got your permission to
mention Charlie, really quick. How do you know the Giants didn't make some adjustments, some minor or subtle adjustments that maybe I didn't notice, you didn't notice, and the Eagles were beating them anyway?
The thing is, you didn't need minor adjustments. You needed a big adjustment. You needed to change your packages. You needed to change your whole attitude. I mean, we couldn't stop them from sacking Eli or at least putting pressure. So what do you got to do? You got to change it up. I would have taken Williams out. I would have put in Cox. I would have put in Hillis Moore because at least they can catch passes.
Yeah, but Charlie, how about this? One change the Giants did make, they took snaps away from Larry Donnell and gave him to Daniel Fells because Fells is a better blocker. That was a change that they made.
One. That was one
change.
What
do you want to do? Change the whole roster?
We didn't change anything. We didn't do anything. We ended up rushing three guys. That was a great change.
They were rushing four guys most of the time. Charlie, we got to move on. Thanks for the call, my friend.
All right. We'll see what happens next week.
Yes,
hopefully,
we will.
It could be awful. It could be terrible, but hopefully it won't be.
All right, Captain Sunshine. Thank you.
Oh, boy. We got to dig deep for some new nicknames. That is great, Charlie.
You know, and the funny thing about it, Portland, Maine is like this beautiful town. There's trees, there's sun, there's nature. You should be serene up there. He's got his Annika.
Well, that's what keeps him calm, apparently. He's got his Annika.
Could you imagine if he was like living in New York City, how high strung Charlie would be? My goodness.
I don't even want to go there. But it's not an experiment.
But him and Dottino just like in the same small room, just have him bounce off the walls as much as possible. See who walks out of there alive.
Yes, because we know only one of them will be walking
out
alive.
Yes, correct.
I can guarantee you that. Listen, he brings up a good point in the sense that over the course of the NFL landscape, good coaches do make adjustments. I don't think that's crazy of a statement to make.
And
you're right,
the
they do make adjustments
to the second. And I think the Giants did make adjustments.
It's hard to look at the game and dissect and say, okay, well, they did this because we don't know the game plan. I mean, they may have made some minor tweaks. Did they make, you know, big-time tweaks that certainly made an impact on this game? No. Because clearly there was no big difference between the first half and the second half. But I'm sure they made some schematic adjustments.
Of course.
I refuse to believe that, you know, they went in at halftime and said, all right, guys, we're going to go out there and just repeat what
we're down 20-0. We were dominated.
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go out. We're going to do the same exact thing in the second half. That's the plan. I guarantee you that was not Tom Coughlin's motivational speech at halftime.
And, you know, the other thing to keep in mind, he brought up Nat Burhey, who is known for being a tackling machine. They call him the Rocket because he just can slam into people.
He's not that fast, though. He's not that fast. That was his hit going to college. He's not fast.
And that doesn't mean that he's an ideal matchup for LeSean McCoy, too, who's a very shifty defender. I mean, on paper, it looks like a good matchup. Hey, McCoy's fast, so just bring in Burhey, and he'll find the perfect angle. It's not always necessarily going to work. And remember, Burhey initially replaced Stevie Brown. Yet the following week, they could have kept Burhey in the starting lineup, but they chose Quinton Demps over him. So, you know, that's another example of the coaches seeing something in practice that we are not necessarily seeing in the games, and you have to at least understand that. They are monitoring these guys each and every day.
And one rookie mistake against the Eagles, over-aggressive or maybe a step slow, you're going to get burnt. You're going
to
get burnt. 201. 939-4513. Drew is in Virginia. Drew, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, John, Lance, how you guys doing, man?
Thanks for calling back, Drew.
Doing well. What's up?
Good, good. Hey, man, the reason I called, man, and I just got 2 points, man, that I want to get off my chest. And one goes to a phone call from yesterday. And actually, this is specifically to Ann, okay?
I hope she's listening, by the way. Continue.
Well, I hope so, too.
Yeah, I do.
I don't know what exactly is her obsession is with Tom Coughlin. You know, maybe she's got an issue with older white gentlemen, and I am going to say that.
Well, I'm no psychiatrist, but I don't know if I want to delve into that one.
Well, in fairness, she has made statements like that before because she's a little off her rocker, so I get where Drew's coming from. But let's not go down that long, winding road.
Yeah.
It's not going to bring us anywhere we want to go.
My point is going to be quick, okay, for this, okay? First and foremost, I don't know what game she was watching or whoever, but Tom Coughlin was not outcoached. His team was outplayed, but he was not outcoached. As you said, as you guys pointed out yesterday, you could have had the greatest minds on that sideline, and they still would have got plastered the way they got plastered because the bottom line is the Giants simply wasn't prepared to play. And let's reverse roles. Chip Kelly could have been coaching the Giants, and Tom Coughlin might have been on the other side. And Chip Kelly would have lost that game, and Tom Coughlin would have won. So it wasn't that Tom was outcoached. That's ridiculous. The bottom line is the Giants simply did not show up. All right, so
no question, Drew. Drew, more often than not, it's about the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's. So, and I think that was certainly the case on Sunday.
Right, you know. So, I mean, you know, did Tom make some, you know, do coaches make mistakes? Of course coaches make mistakes. No one is perfect. But this ridiculous notion that he was out-coached is laughable. And if you watched any of the games, you would understand that.
What's your second point, Drew?
The other point that I want to make is, and somebody else kind of touched on it real quick. You know, the way the Giants played, and the Giants got embarrassed and everything, this goes to their heart, okay? The Giants left a man on the field, okay? They got embarrassed, and they left a man on the field. You know, they left a man behind. To me, they need to look themselves in the mirror, okay, and go out there in this next game. Whether they win or lose is at this point, is irrelevant. But give 100% effort. Looking at this game, I can't say that anybody gave 100% effort. So in this next game coming up against Dallas, again, you know, whether you win or lose is irrelevant at this point in time. Show up, give 100%, and atone for the mess you left out there on the field, especially leaving the man behind.
Well, I think that sounds like a good game plan, Drew, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. It's a big bounce-back opportunity for the Giants on many fronts, from a physical standpoint, from a mental standpoint. You're heading into the bye.
Every standpoint. Yeah.
So, that's the mentality that the Giants have to have going into that contest.
Hey, look, I'm not going to say it's the season because we've seen very strange things happen before. And 3-5 halfway through, I mean 3-4 rather, 7 games into the season is certainly no reason to, you know, hold a funeral here in East Rutherford. But it's a very, very, very important game. Game in the division. We know about the schedule after the bye. Coming off a bad loss. You know, build some momentum after this Cruz injury. Show to yourselves that you could win without your best wide receiver. This is a self-confidence thing, too, for the team. Because if you don't think in the back of their minds, Eli's thinking and Beckham's thinking and, you know, even McAdoo's thinking, boy, can we do this without Cruz? I'm sure they're not, you know, working this week based on that thought. But to think that thought isn't bouncing around their head somewhere in the deep recesses when they get negative from time to time, I'm sure it is. And they have to fight through it.
Well, on the surface, you know, you looked at this Giants roster on paper, John, a few weeks ago, and you said when Odell Beckham comes back, the oppositions are going to have to deal with Beckham. They're going to have to deal with Cruz.
Yep.
They're going to have to deal with Randall. Larry Donnell is now emerging. Rashad Jennings looks good. You know, listen, it's not necessarily named star power on paper, but you got some playmakers. Eli has the opportunity to spread the wealth. You take Cruz out of that equation. Donnell comes back down to earth a little. Randall up and down. It's not looking as rosy and optimistic as it was a few weeks ago.
And to rely on Odell Beckham after just 2 weeks of practice as a rookie to be some kind of superstar right away is probably asking a little bit too much, to be quite honest with you.
Let's get to some tweets before we get back.
Sure,
to
and by the way, we will go to 105 today since we started at 12:05. So we got 13 minutes. We have 4 more calls, but Lance, why don't we hit some tweets first?
I know some of you can't call in, so
yes,
we want to try to keep this as interactive as possible. We'll go to Weehigh Click at Weehigh Click says, shouldn't Zach Bowman be the next man up in the secondary? He will be the next man up, at least in replacing DRC, if DRC has to continue to come in and out of the lineup.
Bowman's an outside corner, guys. He can't play the slot. That's the problem. And that's why, frankly, you know, everyone kind of raised their eyebrows. Why is Hosley on this team after he came back from that suspension? He can play the slot. And Prince has never played the slot. Bowman's not a slot guy. DRC did it in Philly, but he had issues down there when he did it in Philly. Now he's banged up. So you need Holsey on this team because he can play that slot position, which in the NFL now is basically a starting cornerback spot. What else you got?
At Ben_CoverU, have the Giants totally given up on Terrell Thomas for the slot? Last year he looked relatively effective. Now, Thomas is still a free agent. He's familiar with the system. I'm a little surprised that we haven't heard as much chatter, but it leads me to believe that either they have a concern with him medically or they just feel they're in the position. We'd rather groom a younger guy like a Chandler Fenner than go back to what we've utilized in previous seasons. And I know a lot of fans, when you're looking at the organization, everything is short term. Hey, let's just bring in a guy who can get us through this season. And that's important. But I think the other side of the philosophy is let's also try to groom somebody at the same time that perhaps can map out some type of a role for years to come. Because remember, when the Giants were aggressive in free agency this year, Walter Thurmond was given a one-year contract. So there's no guarantee that he's coming back. Zach Bowman was not given a long-term contract. Okay, DRC, you have some cushion. Prince, you picked up the additional year option, but you haven't locked him up long-term. So it's better at times to groom a young guy, and I'm not saying he's going to be a savior, but at least you could continue to beef up the depth chart as opposed to bringing back Terrell Thomas for, you know, let's say 7 or 8 games, and then you know at the end of the season you're not going to rely on him long term. So I think that's more of a long term aspect than them necessarily bringing in somebody on the short term. Another name that was brought up, I believe it was not on Twitter, I don't have the tweet in front of me, Charles James, another guy who obviously is familiar with the system.
On the Texans practice squad,
by the
way.
So that's why you can't obviously go back to him. So that should clarify.
You can't claim him on the practice squad.
But, you know, obviously, I think right now, though, Fenner makes
sense. They think Fenner's the next best guy up.
I don't know if James or Thomas is going to be that much more of a difference maker in the big picture.
And we'll see whether or not, you know, he turns out to be the best replacement. But the Giants, you know, they scour the waiver wire all the time, folks. That's who they think the next best guy up is. Zeke, our buddy Zeke, we haven't heard from him in a while. He's trying to call and he can't get through. The phones are all busy. So I told him to tweet his question. Keep an eye on that.
Absolutely.
Maybe we'll tweet something in. All right. Let's go to Kashawn down in Maryland. Kashawn, you're up next. What's going on?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing great, Kashawn. How are you?
Good, good. Okay, a few points.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't know how the Giants don't show up for a game like that in a week when they were constantly running their mouths like a typical New Yorker, and then they go to the Eagles and then lay an egg. There was just no excuse for
that. Now, Kashawn, in fairness, and I should have made this point yesterday, and we made it last week a bit, so I'll be really quick, and I'll let you finish. I thought the trash talk last week was really overblown by the media. I don't think it was really bad from either team going back and forth. We saw much worse in years past from LeSean McCoy, from Brandon Jacobs with some real trash talk. I honestly thought a lot of the stuff last week was very manufactured, to be quite honest with you.
So there was no website link about Eli throwing interceptions on the Philadelphia website, because that's what I heard.
Well, there was, and correct, Kashawn. No, you heard right, and there was an article, and it was taken down. The Philadelphia Eagles did take that article down. They had mapped out all of his interceptions.
Well, and quite frankly, and you mentioned the Giants running their mouths. That was coming from the Philadelphia side back to the Giants.
Okay.
The only thing the Giant players did, Pierre Paul said the Eagles could easily be 0-4 instead of 4-1, which obviously the math is a little shady there,
which
is understandable. But you know what, frankly, the Eagles could have been. So I don't think that was bad trash talk.
That was a compliment, if anything.
And then, frankly, you had that dopey picture that the license plates guy tweeted himself where Prince and DRC just think they're taking some photo with the fan. Whatever. Exactly.
I mean, listen, if you're a fan and you go up to a player and you're like, listen, could you do this thing for me? I'm a diehard fan. Hold up the zero. I mean, are you really going to criticize Prince and DRC? I mean, to me, I think that's taking it a little too far. The Eagles, though, you know, they also put together that cartoon on their website, but that's something they do every year and every game.
They do that for every game for every opponent.
So,
and quite frankly, they're usually kind of funny. I make sure I watch them every week.
I mean,
I find them
amusing.
It's
harmless. It really is harmless.
All right, Kashawn, finish up. What else you got?
Okay, two more. First of all, and then I made a comment when the Eagles had wore all black. I said, they're trying to be intimidating. They have all black on. I said, and then a friend of mine said, yeah, they're going to a funeral. Yeah, it was our funeral. And so just based on the way we played. Because I am so over the Perry Fuel zone defense, like I despise the zone. I would love, and I was talking to the fellas yesterday, I would love for Rex Ryan to be our next defensive coordinator. So I'm just going to throw that out there because it's looking like the Jets might fire him. And if I'm John Mara, I'm going to Rex and saying, look, you want to come across the street and you have complete control of the defense. He can be so creative with his blitzes and really utilize the talent on his team. I think Rex will be an outstanding defensive coordinator for the Giants.
Well, Kashawn, two things on that very quickly. Maybe Tom Coughlin and Rex Ryan doing that MetLife commercial have fostered a friendship. But that obviously just a joke. But actually, honestly, Carl Banks actually came up to me at halftime of that Eagles game and said, John, Perry Fuel's playing way too much man-to-man against a team like the Eagles that spread the field, have a lot of speed. And he actually thought the Giants played too much man in that game against Philadelphia, and it was hurting them because they couldn't keep up with those Eagles wide receivers and tight ends doing those long routes across the field that they like to do. So I'm not sure you have a case for the game against the Eagles about Perry Fuel playing too much man-to-man.
Well, I just saw all those that real estate when Nick Foles was just throwing the ball down in the middle, and then I think Derek Sproles had a big run. I don't know. I just – you know how I feel about this, John. Anyway, let me finish up with this. So, I don't know. I guess we – as far as next week beating the Cowboys, we really need Jennings. But I guess I was thinking about this. A lot of teams in the NFL are losing key players. I think Green Bay lost a couple of starters. New England lost a couple of starters. And it's like I wish the Giants could be a team that no matter who leaves, we can respond. How do we respond to injury? I mean, I think the Patriots are a perfect example of they've lost key guys. I mean, Jarrett Mayo, and I think they just lost their running back. But,
well, time will tell,
though, Kashawn.
They were
doing it for years, and no matter who they lost, they kept winning. They kept winning.
They did? No, listen, it says
Kashawn,
a lot about
the
organization and the depth
chart.
I appreciate the phone call. I mean, she just mentioned, though, Ridley and Mayo. I mean, they got hurt the last game. So let's see if Shane Vereen and Brandon Bolden can fill in the void. Let's see what they do in the linebacking core. I mean, the Patriots' defense has had its fair share of issues. However, she does make a good point that they've had stability over the years, and whether guys come in or out of the system, they buy in, and they're able to maintain a level of success from one year to the other. That's the reason why the Patriots seem to win double-digit victories every
Injuries
year.
Do hurt everybody, though.
Correct.
And, you know, and it's hard to recover. There are only so many starting caliber players in the league, and, you know, you can only run out so many of them. Nana is down in Georgia. Nana, welcome back to the show.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Nana.
Hey, well, I want to first start off by saying that I'm happy that Victor Cruz had a successful surgery.
Yep.
So that was good to hear. I want to give Eli Manning some credit because I was afraid that the game would turn into a turnover bowl, and it really didn't. So that showed me that, you know, Eli has grown a lot because last year he was forcing the ball when he was being pressured. So I was happy to see that he was taking the sacks instead of just, you know, giving the ball away.
You know, Nada, I think that's a great point.
Credit on that.
I think that's a great point. Eli is just one interception in his last four games, and that was on that Reuben Randle play, which wasn't even his fault. So he certainly has protected the ball better this year. I agree 100%.
Yeah, so I haven't noticed much people say anything about that. So that's one thing I was happy about because that could have made the night a lot worse for us. And as far as people going on and, you know, I mean, I understand, yeah, it was terrible to see Pugh get worked like that. But at the same time, I'm not sitting there saying that he needs to be benched because this really is his only bad game that he had his career
right.
Or the worst. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not ready to say he needs to be benched or felt like he should have been benched during the game because to me, my thing is who else is going to come in and do better because by this time we are, you know, we was out of the game pretty much. And then the next thing I want to say is that, you know, this team really isn't as bad as we look. You know, because if you ask me, we should have been down by 56 points. You know, and we wasn't. They only scored, I mean, think about that, 27 points. That's less than what we were scoring when we were winning.
Nana, I think it's fair to say the Giants are better than what they showed against the Eagles. Last point, finish up for us.
That's pretty much all I had to say. You know, so I'm looking at this like this is a positive thing. The positive thing is that, you know, we didn't score any points, but it was just, you know, we only got outscored by 27 points. So I look at it as we can bounce back and, you know, actually win this game if we come back with a better attitude.
Thank you, Nana.
You know, in this game coming up.
Appreciate it.
All right, Nana.
All right.
Thank you.
Mean, the loss is bad regardless of
we
what
need
the
banana
scores.
In the room
yeah,
with Charlie.
I was going to say.
Maybe Nana can get Charlie cheered up a little
bit. The optimistic
perspective. Hey, you know what, though?
Yeah.
You have to move on to the next game. And you have to take something out of the game last week. And if you can figure out a way to take a positive out of it like Nana did, God bless you.
Well,
God bless you.
They didn't bench Will Beattie last year when he struggled game to game. So there's no reason why they should bench Justin Pugh after one struggle.
It's hard to make major adjustments
course,
in the middle of the game. You game plan during the week. You have a plan. You can't just abandon that at the first sign of things going bad. Now, I'm going to say you can't make adjustments. But to say, well, let's just throw away everything we did the last 5 days and start over on Sunday at halftime, it's kind of hard to do that.
Well, and here's the other thing. Is there a better answer on the bench?
Right.
I'd like somebody to answer that question.
Yeah, Charlie Brown didn't exactly, you know, play great football in the preseason.
I mean, is there a better tackle right now on this depth chart than Justin Pugh? If somebody wants to weigh in and argue that, I'm all ears, but I don't think you're going to find that person.
Charles in New Mexico has been waiting patiently. Charles, thanks for calling in, pal. What's up?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
Doing well, Charles. What you got?
Disgusting display on Sunday night. I can tell you, been a Giant fan all my life. The defense doesn't have that aggressiveness, that meanness, that nastiness. And I've been complaining about Perry Fuel. I don't talk to you guys a lot. Only the second time. I listen to you all the time.
Appreciate
it. I'm in the middle of Bronco and Cowboy country. Perry Fuel, I'm sorry, guys. They don't show no meanness at all. There's no aggressiveness. They don't. And in this week, when they go to Dallas, they got to be mean and nasty and get to Romo.
Charles, hey,
let me tell you something. I'm in the bad wagon capital of the world. I'm in New Mexico. This morning when I was at the gym, there was more cowboy shirts than I've seen in the last 10 years.
Well, Charles, you know what, though? Charles, I understand what you're saying, but if there is a lack of meanness, like you say, and I'm not even sure I'm going to be sold on that, I'm not sure if a coach can coach players to be mean. I mean, a player's either mean or he's not mean. I'm not sure that's something that's coachable. You know what I mean?
No, I know, but just some aggression would be great.
Well, keep this in mind. Weston Richburg showed some aggressiveness in the last game, and look at what that did for him.
15
so,
you know what?
keep that in mind, Charles, okay?
But you know what? It's good to see some tenacity there on
it
the
is.
Line. I mean, Justin Pugh played well. Yeah, he got it handed to him this week. But they need to come back this week, give Eli some time. I think, you know, Cruz is going to be a big loss, but I think we're going to be okay if you give Eli time. He always makes the receivers look good.
Oh, that's right, the name of the game, Charles, and appreciate the phone call.
Thanks for calling
all
in.
Right, you guys have a good one.
And thanks for listening, pal. We appreciate it.
Needs time to throw the football.
I think there's aggressiveness. I mean, John Beeson's an aggressive guy. Roll's an aggressive guy. Robert Ayers has been aggressive getting after the quarterback. Colin Jenkins is certainly an aggressive guy that has a mean streak to him. Hankins has been a beast in the middle. And JPP, even though the sack numbers aren't there, he's been very active all year. It's one bad game. I'm not going to say that the defense isn't filled with aggressive, mean guys because of one game. I'm not sure if that's fair.
We've seen flashes out of enough of these players, John, to put two and two together and believe that this group can turn things around. But, you know, coming off a game like that, it's hard to pick out a lot of positives.
Well, and you know what? It's funny. We've seen it in baseball, too. After a baseball game where a team scores 0 or 1 run, what does people say? Well, the team has no energy.
Yeah.
It's because they played bad. You know, a lot of times just because someone plays bad doesn't mean they're not trying or don't have energy. I think sometimes it's hard to differentiate the two watching, but you know what? After 27-0, it's hard for me to really do a lot of defending here. You know,
they're
going
to have to show it on the field Sunday.
No question. Alan East Orange, wrap us up today, my friend. What's going on, Al?
Hey, John.
Hey.
You my guy.
Appreciate
it. I just want to piggyback off what the last caller said. I'm really not a fan of Perry Fuel. I don't like his I don't like his adjustments. I'm not understanding that if Philly comes out and they know on the injury report that it's missing guys on their line, I don't understand where's the blitz packages at. It's not enough blitzing going on. It's not enough pressure on the quarterback. JPP is being good. I like what Jenkins and them are doing. But, I mean, it's a lot of times in that game Sunday where you could clearly see Foles is looking to the left and he see nobody open. He just turns to the right, standing there and throws a strike or a third down completion to one of the open guys, rather the tight end or a wide receiver. I just feel like it's not enough pressure. And we came out the week prior to that in the first half in the Atlanta game. I feel like we didn't take advantage, and it took us all the way to the second half to start getting pressure.
Well, but
I'd like
Al,
to see
Al,
more
Al, keep that in mind. I don't mean to interrupt you, but
you
have to keep in mind, okay, Al, that the Falcons schemed to take away the Giants' pass pressure because what they did was Matt Ryan got rid of the football very quickly, and there were veterans who filled in for the guys that they were missing. So I think a lot of it has to do with the opponent, not so much just entirely what Perry Fuel on the defense is.
And Al, I want to add to what Lance just said for a second. You're right. When the Giants did rush four guys in that first half, Nick Foles had way too much time to throw the football. You're right. But the times that they did bring pressure, and they often did try to bring pressure up the middle to the center, to the guard, both of whom were backups, they didn't get there. And that's how Foles had single coverage on the tight end going across the field, how he had single coverage on Riley Cooper, who led the team in catches. And they took advantage of those single-up opportunities when the Giants blitzed and couldn't get there. The bottom line is that the Giants didn't pressure Foles enough. And we saw when they did pressure Foles, what happened? He threw two picks. So,
And I agree with you. I understand it. That's what I'm saying. I just feel it needs to be a little bit more creativeness. I would like to see some nickel blitzes. I just think about the days when Spagnuolo was there and how he did a lot of things with blitzing and used different players than just our linebackers or our four-down linemen. He used Jabril. He used different people in those times. And I feel like with this talent that we have on defense, it should just be a little bit more pressure coming from different places, a little bit more mix-up than just blitzing in the middle. I would like to see JPP move around a little bit more on the line, kind of like J.J. Watt do. I don't see, you know, he's just as athletic, can bat down balls, and then they move him on the opposite side, and he crashes the pocket. He gets a holding call, which we get an interception on that play. I would like to see more of JPP moving around instead of, you know, he went against the best tackle, one of the best tackles in the league, and he wasn't really winning that match. So let's move him around and get him on somebody that he could take advantage of because that helps. He crashed that pocket, and then they held him on the play, which turned into an interception. And I would like to see more of that. And that's all I have.
All right, Al. Thank you, pal. Right, appreciate you calling in. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
And look, I get it. And you know what? Moving JPP around isn't the worst idea. That's not. I could see you moving him around a little bit, try to get him some better matchups so teams don't know where he's going to be. I buy that.
There's nothing wrong with a little creativity. I don't think it would hurt. But I still get back to, I think a lot of teams are getting rid of the football quicker and also having some max protection against the Giants to prevent them from getting to the quarterback.
And this defensive line is going to be tested this week against that Dallas Cowboys offensive line, even without Doug Free, one of the best units in football, 3 first-round picks in that group. And it's going to be a tough go, not only getting to Tony Romo, but even more important for that defensive line this week, stopping the run.
Yeah, DeMarco Murray is the best rusher in the NFL right now. They're number one rushing team overall in the league. And the other thing to keep in mind is Romo's an extremely elusive quarterback, John. So you may get to him, and then he'll make you look silly by weaving in and out of traffic.
He made, you know, people keep talking about the Terrence Williams catch. What people don't talk about is Romo avoiding two sacks on that patented reverse spin move he had earlier in that possession, or rather earlier in that play, to create the time to find Terrence Williams on that sideline catch.
And he does it multiple times. So even when the protection breaks down for Tony Romo, he'll come back and take care of business himself. Don't be surprised, I'm telling you right now, if the Giants have trouble getting to the quarterback in this game. The Cowboys' offensive line, hands down, is arguably the best offensive line in the National Football League. I don't care if Doug Free misses this game. This is a very strong unit. Even if Perryfield gets creative, they're going to have a hard time getting to Tony Romo.
And Jason Wynn does a great job blocking a tight end as well. DeMarco Murray is a pretty good pass protector. So this is, to me, the biggest challenge for the Giants' defensive front that they've faced all year this week. Guys, this past week, I don't know if you've looked at the numbers. Take your time to look at them, and we're going to wrap up in just a second. But this is your homework assignment before you get to talk to, who's it tomorrow?
Anita Roman.
Anita Roman tomorrow. Look at the numbers in that Cowboys-Seahawks game. The Cowboys only won by 7 points. They dominated that game start to finish. They almost doubled the Seahawks in terms of total yardage. The Seahawks got two touchdowns off of special teams, another off a turnover. So the Cowboys really didn't just beat Seattle. They manhandled one of the most physical defenses in the NFL and ran for over 150 yards. Okay? I mean, that's what you're going to be dealing with. And that was in Seattle. This is in Dallas. So that's what you're going to be dealing with on Sunday. It's a very, very big matchup. John Beeson's going to have to step up. Everybody on that front four, that back four, rather, is going to have to step up. I mean, the Giants' defensive line, you know, McClain, Juquan Williams, this is a challenge.
And the other concern to add to the back end of the secondary for the Giants, if DRC's not 100%, you brought him in to man up on Dez Bryant.
That's a really good point.
That's a big concern right now. Because who else is going to man up with Dez? Prince has been great, but, you know, Dez, he lines up in the slot. Who's taking him? I mean, you may need to think about bringing Antrell Roland to the slot in those circumstances.
And one of our guys, I didn't see that. I forgot who brought up on Twitter. They asked if Antrell Roland can go into the slot. Well, he can, but remember who was in the slot last year here in MetLife Stadium
when the Cowboys
had that game-winning drive. They put Roland in the slot because Tremaine McBride actually got hurt in the middle of that game. He had to come out.
Comes full circle.
Cole Beasley made two plays on him, and Dez Bryant made a play on him. So, again, this is not the week to have your defensive secondary banged up. And, again, a big job for the Giants' defensive front as well. Lance, a pleasure as always, my friend. We will talk to you on Sunday for the Giants pregame show on WFAN. It comes your way at 2:10. We will be on the air and for 2 hours and 15 minutes before the game, and then you and Jeff Fields will have the postgame as well.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
Everybody, enjoy your day on Giants.com. Tomorrow, 11 a.m., Coach Coughlin is live talking to the media, and then you have Paul Dettine on Roman Ullman breaking it down, and then Roman and Anita Marks will have Big Blue Kickoff live at noon. Everybody, enjoy your day. Have a good one.